Welcome to Industry Insights, the EFM podcast presented by the European Film Market of the Berlinale, the podcast that puts a spotlight on highly topical and trend-setting industry issues, your compass in a shifting landscape of film. Industry Insights, the EFM podcast, is co-funded by Creative Europe Media. This episode has been developed in partnership with the Göteborg Film Festival. My name is Johanna Koljonen. I'm a media analyst based in Sweden and the author of the Göteborg Film Festival's Nostradamus report, which has inspired today's conversation on distributing arthouse films. The annual Nostradamus report looks at the near future of the film industry. This year's edition is the 12th, and it has the title Reality/Resistance. In it, I argue that this industry has historically been reality-resistant. We've felt that our work is isolated more or less from real-world concerns. And film itself, of course, also has that weird relationship with reality, where film both allows us to escape it, as well as to see it more clearly. On the individual level, it's always been so unlikely to have a career in film, and also so unlikely for any individual project to actually get to a green light, that it's almost been a necessity for all of us to be in denial about our odds of success. But today, the pressures from reality are not of the kind that we can hustle ourselves out of by working even longer days or just having a bit of luck. At a time when public funding is pressured and the marketplace is transformed, we must also build resilience into the sector. We need financially sustainable business practices and workplaces that are suitable for humans. And we need to identify not just the threats, but also opportunities, potential new paths for our work to get made and seen. Often these tools and business models already exist, but we in the traditional industry haven't been able to leverage them because our internal narratives about how things are properly done are very strong. We tell ourselves stories about what is possible and impossible, about what counts as real filmmaking, about what kind of content travels, about who can create global hits and who can't. Stories that don't actually match up with the reality of today's audiovisual production landscape. The situation in the world is worse than our current business practices assume. But inside the industry, the situation is in many ways also better than we think. And if all of this sounds interesting, the Nostradamus report is free to download. You can find a link in the show notes. What we're going to talk about today is based specifically on the report's seventh chapter, which is called What We Know About Getting the Work and the Word Out. It has a pretty wide scope, but today we're going to talk specifically about distribution of arthouse film. And we're probably also going to touch a little bit on the chapter called Rethinking Development, because many of the activities connected to selling, releasing, communicating, marketing and promoting film today are built on a foundation laid in the development period. With me today to discuss the reality of successful distribution are three distinguished guests. Huub Roofink is the founder and managing director of Cherry Pickers Film Distribution in the Benelux. He has wide experience in cinema programming and exploitation and was this year's recipient of the inaugural EFM Film Distributor Award. Congratulations and welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
And Eva Essén is the CEO of Triart Film in Sweden, a distribution company that also owns an art house streaming service and a film magazine. She also worked for a long time in acquisition for home entertainment. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Katarina Tomková is a film producer with Ponkhart and Kaleidoscope Films out of Slovakia. She was also one of the interviewees of this year's Nostradamus report. Welcome to the show.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
Something you all have in common is that you are all serious art house people. But I want to make the distinction, not boring art house people, but serious art house people, to be taken seriously. And I think immediately some people hear this and they hear, art house films. Well, that's not working in the market anymore. Or is it? Is my question mark. That's a little bit the topic for today. But before we go there, I'd like to start just by asking each of you to tell us a little bit about your respective companies and how you work to get the listeners some idea. So, Huub, if we start with you, a Cherry Pickers Film, what is that?
Well, we are an independent distribution company. I founded it 9 years ago, against the odds in a way, because especially I have a marketing colleague and she was completely shocked when I told her. She said, "Are you nuts or what?" But somehow we managed to survive these 10 years. We 9 years now. We release approximately 12 to 15 titles a year by now. I intended to do less, but we seem to be growing also in number, but we are kind of reaching the maximum now, I think, of what we can do. So I think this year we'll end up above 15 even. But yeah, we need to pace ourselves a little bit.
That's great. And what about you, Eva?
We're also an independent company and we have now survived for 15 years, which we're very happy to for, of
Congrats.
Course. thank you. And me and my partner, Triat, we used to work together at a company called Triangle Film many years ago. And at that point, we owned a lot of cinemas, which we do not today. So we also launched a streaming service already like 12 or 13 years ago in order to control one of the distribution windows. And an important thing about that was also to build a community with the audience, because that is something we have aimed for all the time. That is also the reason to why we, a couple of years ago, launched a magazine, Point of View. And now, like 2 years ago, a publishing house focusing on only literature on films or releasing of scripts, like The Worst Person in the World, we release on a script because it's a lovely script. So we're trying to build this home for people interested in film. And also, like Hoopy, I think it's interesting that you talk about the number of releases. We, at the beginning, released about 25 titles, and about half of them are local titles, Swedish titles, and half are acquisitions. And now we're down to 20 and aiming to go like 18 in order to actually having the time to work with all separate, all titles, because 25 is too much.
And Katarina, now I said Punkhurt and Kaleidoscope. What's the relationship with these companies?
Kaleidoscope is my own company where it's only me, myself and I, which is a smaller company and rather focused on co-productions or smaller projects. Whereas with Punkhurt Films, I work under as a producer. And it's a larger company with a bigger infrastructure, with a longer track record. So with more ambitious, bigger projects, I work under Punkhurt Films. And generally speaking, if I can continue to describe my slate. I work with now, I'm happy to say I now work with two generations of Slovak filmmakers. The first one are the ones that started off as documentary filmmakers that shifted into fiction films. That is why hybrid filmmaking is very much in my comfort zone, and it's something where I came from. And then there's the new generation of filmmakers that are doing their debut films. So that's kind of the other generation, of course. In both cases, they do have different focuses, I would say. I could see kind of the generational shift a little bit, also in the format and the way how they think of filmmaking process itself. But I would say in both cases, it has a lot to do with, for all of us, them as authors and me as a producer, really seeing the impact on society. So, and I think I've mentioned it also in the report that I lean towards films that I really feel that they are important to change a mindset, so to say. And of course, as you said, we are a trio of art house people, so I'm no exception. I'm actually, sometimes I know what you were saying, that it might be an unfortunate label in some discussions, but I'm pretty proud because I really feel that it comes hand in hand with a certain value. And I believe in that value. That is why I'm making those films.
So what you're referencing to there, and thank you, but what you're referencing to there is that also actually already in last year's Nostradamus report, I did make the observation that the term art house film makes a lot of sense if you're 46 years old like me and you have grown up in a world where you had to go to a specific building to get to see unusual kinds of films. But for many younger fans of film, even it's not obvious to them why I think the examples that I used in the report then was why Everything Everywhere All at Once is the same kind of film as Zone of Interest. This is not obvious unless you are kind of from a generation and a context where we see art house as a category. Of course, it's also many categories. So that's one of the many background things. Another background observation, I think, from the report this year is that because of all of these things that are happening and because of all the things that are happening with democracy and because of all the threats to arts funding and so on, we need to get really serious about our audiences. If film is as important as we say, especially we who love quality film and art house film and the specialized voices, then surely it needs to reach an audience. It can't just be important because because it exists and it can exist in some kind of isolation and then the experts can go see it. It has to be important for many people. And there is some built-in tension there. Can we deliver on the promise of our own belief that this film is important to many people and something that societies should invest in? So no small question, I'm opening the floor for you. But if I start with this specific question, there is a narrative that art house film is dying, or at least like succeeding with art house films in the marketplace is impossible. Is that true? And also, is it not true? And if so, how?
I don't believe it's dying. I can start with that. That you have in a report when you talk about engaging existing communities and build new engagement, the long-term ones. And I was thinking, because we had in Sweden a great success with a film, My Favorite Cake, who's a film from Iran. And that actually really, everything we did tapped into that mindset of working a lot, I would say, because we had a possibility to first work with, there's a lot of people from Iran living in Sweden. So at first we managed to engage them to help them spread the word. And all of a sudden, since we had the first, you say you have 2 weekends in the report. In Sweden, we actually have 1 weekend.
That's 1 weekend when you have to really see a result in the cinemas to be able to continue.
Yeah, it's difficult here in Sweden because the tickets, they are actually released on the Wednesday when you have the release, 2 days after that on the same. So we have like 2 days, and then on the Monday, you have to have had a full screening house. But since we could work with this existing community and build interests, we got the full theaters, which was excellent. Because then you could, the slower audience, which, you know, the classic art house audience that is maybe doesn't run to the cinema, they got the time. Because all of a sudden, it was a long time on cinemas. Because you can, I like to sneak into, just go to screening and see how does the audience look? Are they the ones that I expected? And you could also see a shift in the audience between the 2 first weeks. And then when I got there 6 to 7 weeks later, it was a totally different audience. But that is when you have a collaboration between existing community, us, and the cinemas. Because I think that is a big problem today, that the cinemas, after the crisis, of course, from the pandemic, they're so eager to not miss the next hit. So they throw out everything that is actually can, with time, find the audience. But then I don't think it's dying. It's absolutely there.
No, I have a similar experience. I also really do not believe the art house cinema is dying. We also released My Favorite Cake, incidentally. But another example is No Other Land. And I can really confirm, first of all, about My Favorite Cake. The collaboration with the theaters is crucial, and we really noticed a very strong feedback from the theaters before the release, and we also had a couple of local festivals, and they really asked us to move the release date because we wanted to switch because the date was very competitive, and we wanted to move the film 1 week earlier. And then we got some really impassioned calls from a couple of exhibitors, and they said, oh, please, please, I want to have this film as the opening film of my festival. And it's 2 weeks later, so please put the release back 2 weeks. And it's not something we are used to because we did it 1 week ago, so we changed again, which doesn't look very stable, but we were very happy that we listened to them and collaborated with them. And that's where it all starts. They engaged their audience. We did our bit, and we also had a fantastic success and a long run, which is crucial for a film like this as well, I guess, because then only you get the more classical art houses reacting logically a little bit slower, and they don't go every week, you know, and they hear about a film, and then they have to decide to go, and then they have to have the time to go, and then they have to find the slot that is suitable. So that, yeah, there's a lot of things aligning for a success like that. And also No Other Land, it's a different story again, because we get so much demand from the start from people that just want to see the film and want to show the film to their peers, you know, political parties, voluntary organizations, all kinds of local organizations, clubs. And it's a lot of work, actually, because they often don't want to show it in the cinema, but in their communal place. So we have to arrange something with a copy and arrange a means of payment, because we also want to pay the filmmakers in the end, you know. this has to do with a lot of things as well, because the film, you know, it had a fantastic run from the start. So it's, you cannot copy a success like that really and say, okay, my next film should be No Other Land again, because it doesn't work like that, obviously. These are very rare examples, but you have to work with it. And you want to ask something, sorry.
No, I'm sort of thinking aloud and realizing that, yeah, that's also, it gets to something really important, which is one of the things that is probably true about the marketplace now and about film and actually all audiovisual media now, is that there's not going to be a one-size-fits-all solution. It's going to be kind of case by case. Everybody's shrugging their heads at the same time. So yes, yeah. So definitely one case by case. And this is interesting. Both of these films are about leveraging existing communities. They have topicality. Otherland is connected to the situation in Palestine.
Yes, they're both very relevant politically, socially, and people really want to engage with those stories, you know. So, because you call me very serious artist, but I'm also a businessman, you know. Yes. I just, you know, I read the pitch and I think this is a great movie. I'm going to make money on it as well, you know.
But that's as it should be. That is resilience. And I think that is especially resilience now in an environment where the public support structures are under so much pressure. Of course, the distribution is often benefiting less from that. But even so, some kind of commercial marketplace like really does need to carry these films. Now I'm turning to you, Katarina. Let me restate a little bit. There is certainly a narrative that even winning an A festival doesn't guarantee an international success for an art house film anymore. And then you will often hear people say, and if it's a smaller film, well, like there's no chance. But you often work on those sort of smaller, very successful festival films. So is this true or is it not true?
It's sometimes true. It is very much the case that an award doesn't really immediately get you a full gigantic release in many countries or even full cinemas in those countries. But before I comment on that, I would maybe take a little bit of a step aside and be a bit philosophical and kind of put the numbers aside a little bit. For me as a producer and how I think of the films that I make, of course, I really want them to be seen and I really want them to perform well in cinemas, not only for myself, but everybody else involved, including the distributors and exhibitors. And here's where I connected to what I was saying, that I lean towards a certain context. And I think this was also mentioned in the report where one of the interviewees was saying that there's short-term and long-term result. And of course, the short-term would be the numbers and the admissions and the streaming numbers that you get. But there's also something as a societal impact, and this is very important for me as well, because I think that if I go into a project, I'm, of course, in the risk that it might not perform as well as I intended it to. But if I do have the results that I see that, you know, it shifted somebody's perspective and it changed somebody's feelings about homophobia and transphobia, or it brought somebody closer to the problem of the genocide in Gaza, or it actually even opened up our eyes to a romanticized version of a country that we have. I like to use the example of us romanticizing France and US, and then suddenly you see films that is portraying a certain kind of poverty or a problem in that country. I still believe that this was a film that does have value, even if it's not translated directly into numbers. And of course, the problem is that you probably won't measure that value right when the film is released, and it's hard to quantify it. And I understand that the marketplace and the business that we operate in needs quantifiable tools. So here's where I get to the other side, and I don't know how deep should I go into the fact that I think that we need to rethink the chain a little bit, or maybe the what we understand as a theatrical release for a film, because particularly with the films that I was making and still make, in some cases, not all, but in some cases, we did have a very lovely audience, but it was not the one that would typically and traditionally would be found among the figures that you would find under the European Audiovisual Observatory, but they were elsewhere. And for me, this is kind of the innovation and the way of how to navigate these smaller films that even with an award.
We should be more specific in case people aren't as nerdy as we are about this topic. So you're saying that these films have reached audiences, but not in traditional distribution. Yes. So their traditional box office numbers don't reflect how many people have actually seen them. And that is because they've been seen how then?
They had a very rich and fruitful festival life. And basically some of the films that I've made been to 200 festivals across all the world. The example that I'd like to use is that during one of the film's premiere at the Berlinale, where you would typically get three or four screenings in rather bigger theaters, you would get a very substantial number that actually didn't even add up the national theatrical release of the film. We are now speaking somewhere in the course of 2,000-3,000 viewers. So only for that one world premiere, we got as many people in cinemas as we got for the entire run in our country. And now multiply this by the 200 festivals that the film then went to. So I think it's a significant number. The actual problem is that it's not collected anywhere. This is not something that we know about. And I see this could be a potential interesting conversation to put next to the release.
I think that's very interesting. And also because Hip was also talking about showing films in community centers and other non-traditional environments, and those numbers don't show up in those numbers either. Eva?
No, but I think that is because I think what you're saying, Katarina, is extremely relevant for our films, and that you have a problem in the support system, both from, say, Creative Europe and the automatic system, and in Sweden from the national supporting system. That, as you say, we cannot. We have had like say European titles like Four Daughters or Les Indésirables. They were total flops on the regular box office, but they have been tremendous successes on in schools and in cinema clubs, libraries. It has been terrific. And as you say, I think for me, having my company is important to work with those kind of films and those kinds of questions. But financially, it will be a problem if the support systems still forces us into the box office. And that is where we're supposed to be. And that is something that, in a way, makes it difficult sometimes as a distributor working with innovation, because we have to be in the regular cinemas in order to be seen. So I think that is extremely relevant. In Sweden, now we're working on finally getting, because we have a lot of kids from schools actually going to a cinema. But they are not counted as well. So now we are finally, after 2 or 3 years of work, getting them to be counted as at least. And I think that is extremely important.
I'm also becoming a little bit radicalized on this issue of counting the festival screenings, because this is a completely solvable problem. It's not as though we don't have this data. It needs to just be collated somehow. And even if it doesn't mean anything else except that the producers and the people, everyone involved can say this is how many people paid to see it somewhere. Even that, just that number could mean so much for a country. What are you thinking?
Well, we do count those numbers, and they are non-theatrical admissions. And if they are paying admissions, we count them as paying admissions. Because for us, we don't really experience as a distributor. I'm sure there are films like this produced in the Netherlands, which have been doing a success like you mentioned, Katarina. But for us, No Other Land already was also a big theatrical success, and it was really engaging with people. So it was both. But we've never experienced the story that you mentioned, Eva, that something was not a box office success, but did go on to be a success in other places. But for me, I'm a box office believer, you know, I focus solely on that. So it might also be a tunnel vision on my part, you know.
But we have to count both, I think.
But then I come maybe with good news or maybe with bad news. I'm not sure, because the bad news is, when we're looking at the value chain as a whole, the amounts of film that are produced, even the amounts of great film that are produced, will not succeed in the traditional system. Just like the numbers, the resources don't work up. We don't have enough slots. But the good news is that there are these other paths. And that makes me very happy to hear you say that, Eva, especially in a market like Sweden, if you have this ludicrous 2-day window from the tickets being released to the premiere, which means you have a 5-day window to hit. This is a very difficult marketing challenge, I think, for any kind of product or service that you have to do the whole communication, like the whole kind of customer journey has to be within probably like a week there. It's a kind of of impossible situation. And that doesn't say that the film doesn't have an audience in Sweden, is what you're proving, Eva, with your work. Then you're saying, no, that film would have had an audience in Sweden, but we had to reach them in these difficult ways because the quote-unquote obvious way didn't work. Katarina, do you want to come in?
Yes, well, I think that exactly you were right in what Eva and Hoop was saying, that they're actually even lowering and thinking of taking less films to attend to them. That makes it, of course, with the number of films that come out of that festival circuit, even harder to get to territories and be sold to territories for distribution from all of the other countries if you have 15 or 18 films per year. And I would imagine that you work with a certain quota of domestic titles or perhaps regional titles. So taking a film from Slovakia might be really a little bit out of reach. And of course, I understand it's also, you have to invest in that film and you have to know that's the business thinking in it. You have to see that the money you invest will come back to you. So I don't think that for every film, that's an option to be theatrically released in every territory in Europe or worldwide. But then I'm thinking they do have a relevant audience, but we need to figure out a different way of how we get it to there, or actually it even is getting there, but we are not collecting the data. And that sort of data is, for example, for very important for me as a producer, because that's the data that I flash then to my future funders and stakeholders to show them. But listen, actually, even if you don't see the number, you know, from the box office, I did have some numbers and it was relevant in some way.
This is interesting. Everything we've talked about kind of nods or like gestures at this idea that there are changes happening in the value chain, that how the decisions are happening. So one is that the producer has to think very early on, and this as also is discussed in the report very much, what's the business model of this film project to begin with? Does it have to succeed in traditional box office to break even? Yes, no. If yes, then how do we make sure we get there with this perhaps narrower focused film? What are the steps going there? And that means because the focus on the audience is so important and you kind of have somewhere along the line, some community needs to become the sort of ambassadors for this title. You need to often think about it already in the development of the film. And that means that this some of this work, which is connected to sales for the business to business audience and then distribution to the sort of end audience, that's producers are doing some of this work now. I know there are sales companies sometimes who come in already on script, and sometimes distributors are working earlier in the value chain, but this is shifting how this is happening. And we've also touched upon this idea that the festival window is a resource. It's not just because it's a window, and as in these are people who pay for tickets, but these are also people who maybe loved the film. And if the distributor could leverage, if the producer could say, here was our festival run, now you distributors in different territories, here are the contact information for 200 people who have already seen this film in your country. Or here is the social media buzz for these 2,000 people who were at these screenings at this festival. Like, you would want to somehow be able to say, well, this film does have an audience already. It's a proven audience in your country. How can you use them in your work to bring them onward and so on? And these are ways of sort of working across this sort of time scale that we haven't historically done. And I don't quite know how to begin to do that either, but it feels that we could do more with the resources that are in there. Because these films do speak to audiences. I don't know. Eva, what are you thinking? You're looking doubtful.
No, not doubtful. I actually agree with you, but I think that somewhere in the report, when you're talking about more production, you're talking about the development, that we have to have more resources in the development. And I think we are at a stage right now where we need more resources in development and in distribution. Same way as production companies has to take the risk, we have to take quite a big risk in distribution right now to start work extremely early with a firm that maybe doesn't even reach the audience in regular or traditional way. And somehow, I don't have the solution for this, of course, but we have to find some, at the beginning, some support system, unfortunately, because the money is not there within the distribution companies right now, at least not in Sweden. So we can make this transformation, especially to try to start earlier, to start to develop, sharing insights, as you say, that having been forced more or less, actually, to when we work with innovation and learn things, to share them with each other. Because we have to work closer to festival, closer to film clubs and everyone. Because now everyone is still working in sort of their field, doing their things as they always have. And we have to change that. But then we have to have resources both financially and person-wise in order to make that transgression.
Do you know how to do, and thanks to, if we could make some, just like, let's make some policy recommendations now that we get to decide about the world. So, or one transformation, very practical, that we would want in many markets, most markets, we would like to be able to sell tickets earlier, at least to the premiere. To say, okay, but don't lock your whole schedule, but like just lock 3 screenings that weekend so we can release those tickets. That would be great, please. If people are able to commit to going to a concert like a year in advance, I'm sure they can commit to going to the cinema a month in advance. And for people, for instance, like me, who will need a babysitter, actually, that's a huge logistical challenge. So I can't do that on 2 days' notice. No way. So then I will never see that film in cinemas. That's one thing. Another one is about leveraging those resources, cooperation. How can you cooperate more? I know that with your model in the Benelux, you're already doing some co-releasing. Could that be developed on like a larger scale? Could you, for instance, could your two companies have benefited somehow from each other when you were both distributing My Favorite Cake? Is there something, some things that you could have learned from each other or to made that more efficient?
Possibly, yeah. Well, first of all, coming back to the remarks you made just now about pre-sales, we do that more and more often now because all sales are now basically digital. More and more cinemas do put in a couple of screenings beforehand in a very early stage and open up the sales. But the regular programming is still done in a very traditional way because it's always done on a Monday. So this is, it's a bit of a, because I used to be a cinema programmer as well. But at the same time, it's possible if you choose this kind of sweet spot kind of time, it can work.
Is there some way that we can collaborate on the production side? We're seeing these sort of collaborations between independent production companies, for instance. Could the small distributors leverage up?
We should do more, and we do that on a very informal level. I have a lot of contact with a couple of colleagues. We also share box office data, for example, local box office data all the time. And we also comment on each other's releases and look at the competition and see what films are doing in other territories, which is always very interesting. But also the Films on the Move program is basically designed to do exactly this. The commission or the agency really wants us to collaborate, and by designing the system the way they did now, with the sales agent being in the lead of the application. I just had a very fruitful meeting last week about a film that we're doing, which is quite complex also in positioning. It's the Fatih Akin. I can mention the title because I guess it's an interesting example, because Fatih Akin is a very, vibrant filmmaker who makes really intense movies. And he now did a Amrum, which was in Cannes, and it's much more classical type of movie, so it might not be what people expect from him. It takes place in the Second World War, but it also has a kind of family element. So it has a lot of elements and a lot of possibilities of positioning, where you want to go, what do you want to do with the release date, how do you want to position Fatih Akin, how do you want to position the story, do you want to go for this whole World War II thing? It's set on an island, there's the scope of the landscape, so you have so many angles, and which one do you choose, which ones do you put up front? We had a really interesting discussion, but I still haven't made a decision yet. I actually have a call later on in the afternoon to make some choices there, but it's very relevant to discuss these topics with colleagues that are all on, because also titles, some chose very interesting. Because Amrum is quite mysterious in most languages, because it's the name of the island where it takes place. But outside of Germany, not many people know this. So there was a couple of very interesting suggestions for titles as well, title changes or subtitles. Anyway, yeah. So collaboration is a very good thing. That's the gist of it.
But I think also there's some sharing assets in some way. On some level, it could be done. I'm thinking about when you're trying to figure out, for instance, which message to put to the front. I hope you all do A/B testing on these messages to different target audiences. But if you don't do A/B testing, like this can be done quite early with like Google Ads, with like 1,000 crowns or so, or like 100 euros maybe, to test like about does this putting this message front actually work with the target audience the way we thought. And I think there is a sort of value in that can probably be tested across markets in an earlier stage. It's interesting to think it could be the sales agent. Sometimes it would be probably the producer kind of coordinating these efforts. That could be very interesting. I'm realizing that we are again already almost running out of time. So I'll try to ask Katarina, in the light of everything you've heard and everything you've thought about this, I mean, already before, how do you see your role as producer changing? What do you think you would like to do differently? And what do you think you would need to do differently?
That's an excellent question. I think that I would really like to know more about the European market as such. And I, you know, this is a thing that I've discussed a couple of times when with my partners, we were discussing, can we do, because you usually would do an Oscar campaign. And if you're nominated for the European Film Awards, I always discussed with several agents, like, how can we do a campaign for the European Film Award? And it's much more complicated because the diversity in Europe, which is on one hand something that I absolutely love and I'm super proud of, that we are, this is this vibrant continent where we, you know, have many languages and many approaches and many cultures, but it's hard to figure out one type of communication that would just work flat over the entire continent. That probably won't be the case. So I think to familiarize myself the most with, you know, specifics of each territory would be something helpful, and I try as much as I can. But again, as you said, we cannot be experts over everything. And I feel that this is a moment where exactly that collaboration and communication and discussion among peers is of great value, and that we should exchange this expertise rather than being these lonesome wolves that reinvent the wheel over and over again, kind of to share that knowledge. And I'm very happy, for example, I think that with some films I've already seen, for example, the very untypical example where two sales agents are partnered up on one title, bringing their expertise to the table, because it doesn't help anybody if I'm doing well, semi-well, medium-well, and the others are struggling. Together we can make a bigger impact. But it's something that I have not heard of before, and it's a new type of thinking. And I very much agree with, you know, we always connect innovation to technological solutions. But I think innovation very much, most of the time probably, is happening in our heads, where we have to flip a switch and start thinking differently about something that we've done forever, like this 10, 15, 20 years. So I think if I can learn somewhere, it's exactly having that discussion and conversation with people I trust and I admire for their expert qualities.
Good thing is you're already a very entrepreneurial producer. No, that's because that's one thing that's lacking a lot as well, because you think you're already thinking a lot about what's happening to your film. And the one of the big problems at the moment, which I think is kind of this mental thing is changing, I think, now, is that producers are solely worried about producing the movie, and then, you know, only when it's produced they start thinking about what should be happening with it. And I think there's a big shift at the moment happening, and you are a very good example of
I was just about to say that there was a time when the producer would sort of make the film and hand it over to somebody else.
Exactly.
And became somebody else's problem. That's gone. There was also a time when a distributor would sort of buy some ads and screen it to some reviewers, and then it was done. And it's not like I was a film critic back in that of that generation, but that's not the case either anymore. So in the report, I say there are basically three ways of reaching an audience. In theory, you can buy, like, you can market your way to a cultural moment in theory. And I don't even believe that that's true. I'm not even sure it's true for Barbie or Wicked or any films like that. It's very difficult to do that the traditional way. And then you really kind of only have two options left. One is building engagement over time, and the other is somehow leveraging an existing community so that you have that sort of seed so that it can then grow. But that does change the timeline about this.
But one thing, it always starts with the movie. You should never forget that, because sometimes
absolutely,
we really start thinking, talking about, you know, how should all these movies become successful? But they become successful for the most important reason, because they are great movies that people want to see. And, you know, so it does start with that in that sense, you know, produce a great movie, and then the all the other steps will be much easier, but still very necessary.
I think now let's do then a final round of practical recommendations or wishes, like for what you wish other people in the sort of value chain would know about how things work these days, or what you would like to change, just so that your work would become a little bit more feasible. Let's assume that the film is great and it's relevant somehow. It has some kind of topicality and it has enough heart that audiences will respond to it, and it's artistically interesting. It's not bland. Now, what would everybody need to know for this film to work, or what would you like to change?
Very difficult question. I think if this is the case, then the film, because then there's all these people along the line that know how to identify a great film. There will be a good sales agent attached. They will know what to do because they will do the international marketing. They will do, they will provide it to an AA festival, which, and it ends up in competition. The film will get noticed. It will get great reviews from the international trades. They start off with a great poster that already has a great image in the minds of the professional people, and then we'll trickle down to the next level, which are us, and we are also touched by the marketing aspects of the first round, and then we think, oh, this is a great movie, I want to buy it, and then we pay way too much money for it, and then we and then we start really putting our, you know, our every effort in it, because we have to make the money back, and then we put all the focus on the title, because then the title will be lifted out if it's such a great movie. I firmly believe that the ecosystem in that way works quite well. But the problem is we have too many films.
Yeah, implicit in that is that the producer has made sure that those excellent visual assets are there so that you can have the poster and that it matches the genre of the film very importantly and the audiences. And then it has been a little bit lucky within its competition categories. And it's been put, so it's already kind of the tastemakers have had access to it. That's one of the things. Mm-hmm. So then if you have a film that didn't have that festival path, then you kind of need to get it in front of those tastemakers in some other way. That's an implicit piece of advice. Yeah.
Yeah, then it becomes harder because the train has already left the station, you know. And that is a hard thing, because I do believe that there are very good movies that don't get distributed because they didn't end up, because they just went to Cala Vivari and the local people didn't go to Cala Vivari because I didn't have time to go there. And it wasn't bought by one of the colleagues I speak to, and then it just ends up under the radar. It happens.
And that's not good enough. We can do better. Okay, yeah. Eva, yeah. What would be your advice?
Eva can do better.
I don't think so. No, but if it's, as you say, if you have a film that has made all these things that you said to start with, Johanna, then I think all we ask for is for please, cinemas, release the tickets so we can point the audience somewhere. Don't make them wait. That is sort of the last thing we need, cooperation with the local cinema. Because as Hib says, we have everything else in place. Otherwise, it's such boring things that please have the assets ready in time. Come to the first international launch with a good set of stills. If you don't have a trailer, at least some decent clips so we can start the positioning of the film. So quite most of the time, it is time. Make sure that we get the time to actually also use the bus that is hopefully there on the international festival launch, so it doesn't die on its way to translation and everything before it hit the cinema.
But then let me ask you this, Eva, since you do have a streaming service and you said you wanted to build a community and you have a film magazine, like you have many things, that you have some other ways where the curatorial brand of you as a distributor has an audience of its own. If you were to find out about that film from Carlo Vivari, for instance, let's say Caterina was involved and now she says, I have a gem here that didn't get the buzz. Could you make that work within your sort of your local ecosystem for the Swedish market?
I would say no, unfortunately. And that is the revenues are too small from the streaming service only. Hopefully we could get it with English subtitles so we don't have that issue. Otherwise, it's already too expensive. But the support systems are also too focused on the theatrical release. So it's difficult if you don't have the theatrical list to start with, I would say.
Yeah, but we could, I mean, if I understand your question correctly, we could pick up something from a local festival and make it work theatrically if the film is good enough. we can, without the whole international thing, I think that could work.
That's the thing, so then
you need to kind of do that work of what the, you don't get the shortcut of the festival, then you need to understand really deeply who the audience is and how to find them, and then you can still make it work, and then it will again work in the other film windows.
And we do have local festivals that we can work with as well, you know, so we have all kinds of ways of also starting the audience life of a film. And
this is a little bit hopeful. I think this is hopeful. Katarina, okay, final words. What's your piece of advice?
No pressure. No, I do have two things, because I think either Eva or who touched on the subject, that of course I really much agree that, and I said this also within the report, that distribution and development are, for in my taste, horribly underfunded. And we are producing so much content in Europe, yet we are investing so little into, you know, putting it onto the path to the audience. So that is for one. And I can see, you know, art house distributors and exhibitors really putting their heart and soul, but there's just so much they can do with limited funding. That for me is number one. And I really think that this is something that we should think about. Of course, question is, with the uncertainty of public funding, how could we think? And I liked your, some of the hints within the report that possibly we could kind of think of private funding and have private entities kind of step into the whole process, though I cannot really answer how as of yet. That's a more complex probably issue too for another podcast. But then again, I also think that there are films that are gems, but they somehow trickle through the, you know, all the festival kind of momentum. So that is where I think it's not possibly the path for every single film to kind of have that, you know, I won the Palme d'Or and now I'm going to go and have like this amazing theatrical release. And it's okay. It's just we have to redefine the way how this film gets to its audience. And for example, I will use the example that I had with one of the films that I had in Venice that won the Europa Cinemas label. I've used this example in Cannes during the panel. It was not sold theatrically because it's a super tiny, small film, and I completely understand why it did not have the theatrical release in the countries, but it was really beautiful to see the exhibitors themselves wanting to screen the film and contacting us and my sales agent through Europa Cinemas and then programming in the film itself directly into the cinema. So I think that could be another kind of different type of chain for the smaller films that don't get into the lineup of Hub or Eva, or, you know, because they are limited with the 15, 20 films that they can get per year. Yeah. And I understand that. So it's just that different type of kind of breaking the chain with the smaller titles for me to kind of, maybe that could be a way. I'm asking, I don't know. Possibly.
I think it has to be. And I mean, now, of course, we're out of time, just as we have identified another really important thing. But I will try to spell it out and then we can see if you agree. But because in a way, we're saying the sort of institutional path can only carry so many titles. But that doesn't mean that the door is entirely closed. So there is a social network between humans in this film industry who can love film and who can talk to each other. And you can find these other paths. And also tastemakers and reviewers. Not only reviewers in the trades are tastemakers. There are a lot of people in the film industry and who are huge film fans who are on Letterboxd. And these places where the reviews are shared and buzz can be built in other ways. And we haven't traditionally had to or gotten to lean into that film talk as well, of course. And maybe now we are going to have to learn to think about buzz on these other kinds of review platforms as well as a huge possibility. I'm afraid we're going to have to end here, but we're going to have to come back and talk more about this.
Now
everybody gets us homework to make this happen. And then we come back in a year and evaluate. Does that sound right?
Perfect.
Yes. Deal. All right. Thank you so much, Hupo Winke Wesen and Katarina Tomkova, for taking the time.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you.
That is all for today. But don't forget to download the Nostradamus report from your free link in the show notes. No email or sign up required. If you find something particularly insightful or delightful, do tell your friends. That is, of course, also true for this podcast. Rate and share on your podcast platform of choice, or just point your friends to the website of the European Film Market. That's www.efm-berlinale.de. www.efm-berlinale.de. Industry Insights, the EFM podcast, is co-funded by Creative Europe Media. This episode has been developed in partnership with the Göteborg Film Festival. Thanks for listening.